Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
It is 12 noon on Friday, and that means we've got a game to get ready for. Rumor has it there's a big one going on tomorrow at Notre Dame Stadium.
You could say that. Another big one,
huh?
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing, Evan, that this is the first time since 2009 that these teams have played as ranked teams. That just really kind of caught me off guard when I first heard that.
Yeah, and I think I saw someone talking about, like, potential signature wins for Notre Dame, you know, over the past 5 years. And mm-hmm. I think USC was, I think, on that list a couple of times. I think, you know, you'd have to disagree with that during those years. And then vice versa for USC, you know, you couldn't say that last year. So it's relevant this year. I think it's a big game for both teams here midway through the season, and kind of, you know, can set the tone for Notre Dame coming off of a bye week, setting the tone for a tough slate of games in the second half of the season.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I saw kind of a Twitter battle going on between
some of the guys on the beat
about what was and what wasn't fitting the qualifications.
Everyone points to Oklahoma in 2012. I think there's no doubting that. But really, if you're looking at a lot of the games, I think that an argument was made. Sure, they're Power Five programs and they were good teams, but I don't know if it had the same national appeal.
Right.
It was one team was down, you know, that year. So you know, the signature win. I mean, it's, you know, you think it's got to be a team that's in the top 10. I think if there's anything you're pointing to over the last 8 years, there haven't been a lot of those types of wins. But if we're looking forward, you have this game this week. I mean, there's not a lack of marquee matchups the rest of the season. They're all there.
Exactly.
You know, if each team is taking care of business, you know, Saturdays are going to be pretty interesting for Notre Dame fans here for the next 6-7 weeks.
And I mean, signature win, because even if you point to 2012, as you mentioned, Oklahoma, but they got through 2012, and besides Oklahoma, they weren't necessarily signature wins along the way. They were just an accumulation of wins, some of them a little bit bigger than others, Oklahoma being the biggest.
I think part of the reason maybe that is, you know, you're not playing for a conference championship. Mm-hmm. It's national championship or bust. So the signature win just happened to come during that run. You know, these other wins, granted, are maybe not as big as that OU win in 2012, but are still, you know, they're still big wins. But because you're going to the El Paso Bowl, they don't mean as much.
Right. Absolutely. And now, I mean, it goes without saying that this would be signature for this season. And I mean, they've had all these close losses, and there's no solace in a close loss at this point. It's pretty much single elimination every week for both Notre Dame and USC from here on out, starting with this week when you're talking about the big picture at the end of the season in the college football playoff.
Got to be a fun way to play.
Yeah.
As a player, you know, it's you control your own destiny. It's better than saying, if we win out, we're not going to make it. if Notre Dame gets hot and they win each week, they're going to have a really nice resume.
Absolutely.
How do you say no to a team? You know, your one loss is against Georgia, who right now is looking like, you know, one of the top five teams in the nation, which they are. You know, that's, you're gonna, if they make this run, it's gonna be USC, NC State. You can throw Miami in there. You can throw Stanford in there. I mean, there's some really good football teams this second half of the season. So it's you hit it. Single elimination. Great way, as a player, love it.
And I saw a headline where Kirk Herbstreit said the loser of USC and Notre Dame is done for the playoff. It's like, really? You think?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think we all pretty much knew that. Two losses isn't going to get you anywhere, but especially from Notre Dame's perspective with the schedule that's in front of them, still the second toughest in the nation over these last 6 weeks. There's no doubt if they win those games, they're going to be in the top four at the end of the year.
I have no doubt.
The only argument would be is if, like, Penn State, if you've got a couple undefeated teams that end up in there, but I don't think you're going to have that many unbeaten teams. You never do.
With the brand Notre Dame has too, I think, I mean, that's it's going to be a tough team to turn away.
Always helps.
With one loss, and that one loss being to Georgia.
Yep. With Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers. It is the kickoff of another weekend of football. Notre Dame USC coming up here tomorrow. They'll kick off their intersectional rivalry tomorrow, 7:42 here on WSBT. The day starts with the Jack Swarbrick Show at 1, then the Brian Kelly Show with a couple tons of offensive linemen joining them. They were there at O'Rourke's last night, and of course we replay that at 2 o'clock on game day, and then game day with Evan Sharpley. Tim Grell will be there at 3 o'clock. The guests are, it's a pretty hard-hitting guest list you guys have
tomorrow. We have no time for us to talk. We're just letting our guests host the show.
From the 77 National Championship team celebrating their 40th reunion, you've got All-Americans Bob Golic, Ross Browner, and Luther Bradley, along with some various teammates, sharing his memories of Coach Parsegan, All-American running back Nick Eddy, former outstanding gritty linebacker Jarrett Grace from just a couple of years ago.
We fit in grit.
That's right.
Every show.
Got to have some grit in the shows, right? And then you've got the current manager of the band Chicago and former Irish player Pete Chivarelli, along with various members of the band Chicago. So that's what's going on tomorrow.
Golic, Browner, and Bradley, they have to be probably, and probably Bob. Bob has to be one of my favorite guys to interview. He's
wild.
He's great.
He's really wild, that's for sure.
I think we did a simulcast last year on his radio show that he hosts. We had him call into our show, and we were both live on each other's shows. he's hilarious. Nick's always great to have on, but we've had Ross and Luther on the past couple years too. Just so many awesome stories. Jarrett will be a first-time guest, and so will Peter. So we're excited to have those guys. If you're in the area, I'm sure tailgating is going to get started early. We're going to be over at Ivy Cordon and Suites, which is across from the linebacker bar. We've got free food. As long as all these guys don't eat it before you do,
true.
From Fisher's Tips and Chips. Great barbecue. It's
absolutely
an awesome atmosphere, and hopefully the weather continues the way we've had it all this week, too.
The only thing that stops me from ever getting over there is parking all the way on the other side of campus, basically in the library lot. I guess I could get in a little bit extra exercise in the morning if I walked over there.
There we go.
Though,
yeah,
right?
it's a nice walk.
Oh, it is.
I've made it a couple of times.
And, I mean, it's going to be beautiful this weekend. It might be a little bit cooler tomorrow, it sounds like, but still.
Can't beat it.
It's going to be a great one. And then, of course, at 4 o'clock tomorrow, you've got Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, and I. The IMG pregame show starts at 6:30, and then you've got the game, again, kicking off at about 7:42 at Notre Dame Stadium. After the game, the postgame show, Darren Pritchett, Reggie Brooks have the postgame show. They also have a special guest, and all have player interviews from down on the field after the game as well. Let me ask you this. Is there just a different vibe at practice during USC week, Evan?
It's totally different. We're playing for the jeweled shillelagh here. Come on. that beautiful
That's on your mind all week too, right?
Well, no, not really, but funny story.
But when I
played, we had a each Thursday we'd have a personnel test. So, you know, the offensive players would have to know personnel for who was on the opposing team's defense.
Mm-hmm.
Depth chart, whether a guy was injured or not, you know, it could be.
Like a quiz. You got
to
know.
Yeah, it was. So throughout the week, you're studying, not only are you studying tendencies of, you know, blitz percentages on first, second, third down, or red zone tendencies, things like that, coverages, fronts, all of the above, and then also your game plan for the week. You were studying, while you were watching film, you were studying the opponent. You're watching, you know, the left corner does this. You know, they rotate over when they're in man coverage. This guy does this. He has these tendencies. You know, when this guy's hand is off the ground, here's what he likes to do. The linebacker unit, the safeties. That was all, at the forefront of our mind. So coming in on Thursday, then, we would have a personnel test. And at the time, it started my sophomore year, I believe. So Brady Quinn would have been the quarterback as a senior. And I didn't really expect, you know, you go in, you're the backup quarterback, you're behind an All-American, you wouldn't think that on a Thursday you're going to get a question. Well, these questions started popping up, and I was last. So, you know, Coach Weiss is, you know, going through, all right, you know, asking Brady who's the starting middle linebacker. He goes to the running back, all right, who's the defensive end? You know, asks an offensive lineman, you know, a question. They go to the defensive side, and I'm sitting there, and we get a question, and it's, you know, when was the last time something happened, and in what year was it? and I got stumped the first time, so I wasn't going to let that happen again.
Uh-huh.
So each week I'm scouring UND.com for all of these obscure facts on what could be asked. It was one of those. You could be very specific and try, you know, you could be head on and hit it, or you could completely miss the mark and be like, man, I have absolutely no idea. So I got pretty good at finding, you know, what maybe was going to be talked about. And it started fairly simple. And each week I'd get one right. The questions became more and more obscure, and it was kind of deeper in there to try to stump me. Mm-hmm. And for a while it was history of the certain trophy. So, you know, you had the Legends Trophy with Stanford, where it's part Irish Crystal, part California Redwood. You have the Megaphone with Michigan State. You have this Shillelagh. There's another Shillelagh as well. So I got pretty good at understanding and knowing a lot of these quote unquote rivalry games and the history behind it, but then also the trophies they played for, dude.
Good stuff.
And to answer your question, yes, the week is totally different. Now, granted, this was on my mind, but there was kind of a different buzz on campus. And I remember back to the Bush Push week.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of excitement, you know, with the Notre Dame program, with a new coach. We had won some games. USC coming in, we grew the grass out long, was one big thing. But, you know, they're just, you usually have fans.
Pete Carroll was a real fan of that longer grass.
Well, it was hilarious. You have players come through, walk through, and they're like, we can't play on this. You know, what is this here? So the sod was, it was thick, it was tall. We were trying, I think, to negate their speed, which didn't really work. You know, Reggie Bush was probably the most explosive athlete I've ever seen in person mm-hmm. at the collegiate level. Just amazing what he did. But, you know, early on in South Bend, you get a buzz. You know, it's a different feel. You know, each college program kind of has an atmosphere on campus. A lot of times you started feeling that maybe on a Friday, you know, Friday night, sometimes Thursday, but certainly with the pep rally Friday night and then the player walk, there was a buzz around campus. But with those, that especially that marquee matchup in 2005, it was like Tuesday. You know, we're coming in for our real first day of practice, and you've got people waiting outside of the Goog trying to get autographs and, it you know, trying to watch practice. It just was a totally different feel.
Crazy week.
And it continued to build up. So, you had Tuesday, Wednesday, there's more people around. You know, you could feel it within the student body and classes walking around campus. Like, it was just this continuation of energy that led up to the game. And, you know, obviously the game didn't disappoint either.
Oh, yeah.
But it is different. There's no love loss. You know, I don't like to use the word hate a lot, but, you know, there was some of that hatred on the field. You know,
especially back then, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of these guys too. I mean, Notre Dame recruits the West Coast, so you have some guys coming from California, you have some guys coming from the West Coast over there. So you either played with them growing up or at least knew who they were, and you could kind of feel that tension leading up to the game, and you know, pretty special. Unfortunately, in my career at Notre Dame, we didn't beat USC. That was, you know, that was a huge bummer.
That's as close as it was, right?
Yeah, that was as close as it was. So, you know, not having done that was disappointing. But still playing in some of those, you know, they were all heated. You throw out the records, you know, we talked about there really wasn't necessarily a marquee matchup over the last couple of years between these two teams. Doesn't matter. I mean, it's still, you want to win at all costs. That's certain.
Absolutely. Let's get into this one. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT. It is 12:14 on this Friday afternoon as we get set for tomorrow's Notre Dame-USC game. Brandon Wimbush back after missing the North Carolina game with a foot sprain. Brian Kelly says he's 100%. Wimbush says he's 100%. He spoke with the media this week and I got to ask him a couple of questions. So let's let you hear some of that right now.
Brandon, when you're back there, you're looking at the secondary. Where are you right now compared to maybe week one or week two?
I think the game has slowed down immensely for myself and for the rest of the offense, and I think we're at a point where we're gonna start clicking on a new level, and I'm excited to see what that looks like this weekend. But, you know, recognizing the defense is something I had to improve on, and I think I did.
How much has just film helped some of that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I had 3 weeks to watch a lot more film and prepare for USC, so I think my recognition of what they're going to do, and obviously they're going to implement new schemes, and I have to be prepared for that. But these past 2 weeks have been great in my preparation with Coach Reese and the rest of the quarterbacks.
How would you describe Brandon Wimbush, the quarterback, to somebody?
You know, if you want to compare it to a game, obviously production-wise, it's not been, you know, Aaron Rodgers-esque, but similar in the fact that I'm able to throw the ball, and I think really well, and use my feet when a play breaks down to the best of my ability.
Not Aaron Rodgers-esque, but he's managed to do some good things, though, this year, obviously, with his feet.
Yeah, and what was nice to see is, you know, when things weren't going well through the air, he was able to still make an impact on the game, and that's what you want to see, especially with a guy who has some talent as a runner too. But really, the key during the second half of the season here is he going to develop as a more efficient, more accurate passer? The talent is there. I mean, he's got the arm strength, the mechanical side of things. He's got a pretty good stroke when he throws. It's going to be consistently completing the football, and then not feeling the pressure, and occasionally that can happen, is when you have success running the football like he has early in the season, there is there's the thought of, I need to be out of the pocket sooner than I really should be. The pocket's been pretty clean, and I pointed to Miami of Ohio last time he played. That was one of the most well-blocked games, both run and pass, I think, that they've had all season. And he still was not consistent throwing. So the next step for him is going to be getting that completion percentage between that 60 and 70 mark.
And that's kind of always that line for the mobile quarterback, that maybe he'll be, especially one who's as fast as Brandon Wimbush and can do the things, is that maybe he takes off a little sooner than he
should.
And
what's unique about Brandon is, if you look back to his high school career, he really wasn't a run-first guy. And I never, when I was watching film on him and kind of breaking down and then seeing him early in his career when he wasn't in a playing or starting role, was this guy can move the ball around the field. He can make all the big-time throws. He can throw the 14-yard comeback. He can take a max drop and throw, a double move 18-yard comeback. He has that type of arm strength. I think where you're not really sure when you get to the college level is recognition and reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, on most of his throws, even several of them that he's completing, has been late. And that comes with a little bit of time. When he's been in rhythm, when he's made decisions on time, he's thrown the ball very well. Some of his best throws this year resulted in touchdown passes are when he's comfortable in the pocket, he's not moving too much. It is, I know I'm here to hear, ball has to be out.
Mm-hmm.
When you lock in on one guy too long, that's gonna mess up timing for second read and third read, because now the window you should be looking in, that window is gone. And I think that balancing the run and the pass is something, and we can look back to Georgia too. I think Georgia really probably set the tone for him mentally. He got pressure. He got hit a little bit. And so as a young quarterback, when those bullets are flying like they were that game, the next couple of games, your clock in your head is going to shorten quite a bit. And I think that he's had that's kind of been the battle over the course of the last few weeks. Now he has a bye week. You could throw in North Carolina as well. But really, let's focus on the bye week and saying it's time to hit reset. Okay, we can reset now, refocus. And it's almost like a clean slate now for the second half of the season.
Yep, and it kind of sounds like maybe he did hit reset a little bit. Here's Brian Kelly talking about how Brandon Wimbush looked this week and sounded pretty good.
Today, and again, this is not probably or trying to be overly confident, because you still got to play the game on Saturday. This was his best day that he's been since he's been here. And a lot of it was just he's starting to see things quicker, and we haven't changed things offensively. It's the same things, and he's starting to it's getting near that point of conscious competence where he sees it, he knows what it is, and now if we can kind of build that a little bit more with the receivers, we're going to be in pretty good shape. He's going to get better and better. I know I've kept saying that, but his level of play will get better and better as the weeks go on.
And so we're going to see that. And so after making that comment, Kelly was asked just exactly for a specific example of progress that Wimbush has been able to make this week.
We can move the ball in 2 minutes. We can move the ball. We couldn't even get a first down throughout the entire camp and into the first 5 weeks during 2 minutes. We were 3 and out. We moved the ball down the field now in 2 minutes. And that's a huge accomplishment.
I think the frustrating part is you have a guy who's in his third year in the program, and you know yes, you want to see improvement week to week, but we're talking about, you know, 6-7 games into the season now.
Yeah.
You know, you want, and especially if you lose a quarterback, you don't want to have to each year say, well, we got to wait 7 games for this to work out. You know, it's and part of it is going to be, you know, the development side in the spring and in the summer. And sure, the coach, you know, the coaching staff, they're going to take on a huge responsibility of that, but it's also on the player to make sure that he's ready. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be film study. It's going to be understanding the playbook. But I think it's a little disconcerting to hear that, you know, during fall camp, you couldn't get a first down, not even one first down.
I mean, it's great that you can get it now.
Yeah, to start a drive, right?
Yeah.
And usually in those situations, depending on where the ball is, you know, the defense is probably going to be at least a start in a little bit of off coverage or some type of prevent during a 2 minute drill. And then they start to tighten up if you are able to pick up some yards. So I think I guess I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. It's frustrating, you know, that to hear that was the case to start the season. But I think it's promising now that you're hearing that there is a lot more, you know, there's a positive, they're on a positive trail as far as what the quarterback position is going to bring through the air to pick up some first downs, you know, throw out 2 minutes. I mean, it's got to be done. It's got to be done. Yeah, consistently throughout the entire game.
A lot more than 2 minutes. And here's Kelly, his final comment about Brandon Wimbush on how they were kind of able to finally get him to that point.
So it was really important, Tim, to speed up practice and put him in situations where things were a little faster for him, because they are going to be fast for him Saturday night. And he needs to know that. And he now knows that we really pushed him hard this week to play fast. And anything that was not done at a fast pace was not graded out in a positive manner. So he understands that. He knows what to expect. It's going to take him a little while to get into it, and we're aware of that from a play calling standpoint as well.
And again, it's like, I think this has been kind of obvious for a while, but they're kind of getting to the point where it's like, okay, we have to make sure that we're deliberately doing this, speeding things up, making things as fast. Because we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about it's night and day difference between the speed of things, what you see in a game. I mean, you have a different level of adrenaline flowing in a game. So they've finally kind of consciously tried to simulate that a little bit more, it sounds like, in practice.
Two things. I think that, you know, my question would be, why wasn't this done earlier? I think, you know, that's an easy question. Is you have a guy who really hasn't played a lot at the collegiate level. You know, you have to push the pace. You'd almost say back in the spring, let's make this as uncomfortable as possible. Every practice where it's almost like you don't want to be out here on the field. How can we push the tempo faster? You know, whether it's a little bit of get in your face type of feedback, and, you know, I guess break you down to build you up. Because you can't wait to the season to do that. So, you know, it's great that those strides are now being taken, but it seems a little late that you're realizing that, and maybe, you know, maybe that's the issue. As you saw, the reads are now late in the game, so they're adjusting a little bit. But I think that you probably, I mean, in hindsight, it's 2020.
Yeah.
But you're probably looking back now saying, well, during the spring, this would have been nice to do.
True. 12, coming up on 24, Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Real quick, before we wrap up this first segment, on the subject of two-minute drills, I know they just said that he looked as good as he's looked, and he did it great and all that stuff. Did you see anything from Ian Book that would maybe make you say, okay, if Wimbush keeps showing that he couldn't in a real game, that Book could be
I don't know. That's a tough question. You know, I don't want to see a two quarterback system.
Right. You never want to.
I would think that Brandon's going to be the guy. I don't think that they're going to do, you know, Brandon has more experience than Ian does at this point. You know, we're not looking back at, you know, the Tommy Rees situation where he had been here for 3 or 4 years and was put into some of those two-minute situations. I would still have a lot of confidence in Ian Book going in there and leading a drive. I think right now for the progression of this offense, it's got to be Winbush, especially if they are going to make a run during the second half.
I concur. Just as the quarterback, yeah. I wanted to get your kind of feel if that was a viable option. Again, I agree. I think it's always best when you have one guy leading the whole show.
The backup quarterback, though, is, especially when things are not going great, is usually the most favorite, you know, player on the team.
That's right. And I just think, I mean, we saw it last year. I just think it leads to more problems when you do that. Yeah. But
you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks.
Yep, exactly. 12:25, Sean and Sharpley, the Leprechaun Lunch. Notre Dame is going to be without one of its top defensive players in tomorrow's game. Brian Kelly addressed that last night, and we will talk about that and more when we return. As Evan gets into his chalk talk, he's going to break down Sam Darnold, the USC quarterback, a little bit, do some advantage game with the teams on either side of the ball. So we're going to do that right after this Leprechaun Lunch. Sean and Sharpley, Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. I figure we get some good vibrations rolling once again.
Can't
in the
go
studio.
Wrong with that.
little Marky Mark, that's right. It's almost 12:30 on this Friday. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT as we get set for Notre Dame and USC tomorrow as these two teams go head-to-head, ranked for the first time since 2009. Of course, Leprechaun Lunch is presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit SharpleyTraining.com. And you've got some interesting stuff coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah, a couple of quick things. For quarterbacks in this area, we've got we're calling the QB lab over at Sharpley Training. You can kind of either get the offseason start out with a bang, or if you're a high school quarterback and want to polish some things while the playoffs are still going on, we're going to have some two-hour sessions, some group sessions, which are going to be on Saturdays. We'll work on arm care. We'll do some ballistic throwing, plyo care balls, weighted footballs, drop sequences, pocket movement, off-balance throws, awkward arm angles, film study, defensive coverages, fronts. Speed, agility, strength, and conditioning. So if you kind of want the complete package, that's going to be the answer. So we're going to go 7th through 12th grade quarterbacks. The first period we're calling it is going to be the month of November. So it'll be November 4th, 11th, 18th, 25th. We'll be going early afternoon to make sure it does not conflict with Notre Dame football.
There you go.
So we're looking at a 1 to 3 o'clock slot. So if you have any questions, you can check out SharpleyTraining.com. Go to our Facebook page. We post a lot of different videos. Our Instagram and Twitter, we make sure we've got a lot of videos, flyers, all the information for that. And on the opposite side, if you're, you know, mom and dad, businessman, businesswoman, want to make sure that your fitness is taken care of. So we have classes, monthly classes, just like a regular gym membership. If you want to come in and try out a class, we really would love to have you. We have classes 6 days a week. It's highly structured. So we know that your life's busy. We want to get you in, get you out. Our classes, we've got a really great community of people. It's a lot of fun. Well, we say it's fun when you're done. You know, when you come, you're going to work hard.
You're going to work.
You want to get into shape. That's it's some hard work, but you know, consistency and the community of people that we have there are fantastic. So again, check out SharpleyTraining.com, or if you want to see some videos, to get a real feel for what we do. Not just the athletic training, but also our adult fitness classes. Head over to the Facebook page, Sharpley Training, Instagram page, same thing, and Twitter.
All right. Sounds great. SharpleyTraining.com, or like you said, search for them on Facebook, and you can also call 574-226-8234. 12:32. All right. So probably the big news, other than Wimbush being back and how excited Brian Kelly kind of sounded with him looking great and having a great week of practice, the downside this week for Notre Dame is Greer Martini. He had some surgery last week, and I'll let Brian Kelly tell you about it. He addressed it after practice last night.
I think there's a good chance we'll have him back for North Carolina State. He had a small procedure done to clean up a small meniscus, and he's moving around today pretty good. but we would be rushing to get him back. So we'll hold him out this week, but we feel really confident we'll get him back next week.
So Martini is going to be out, and here's the plan for tomorrow with him out of action.
I think you'll see Jameer playing in there a little bit, so he'll get some play, and not a ton of work. You know, Tavon will play, you know, quite a bit of the game, and then when we get into nickel, you know, we change the rotation up there a little bit as well.
Notre Dame's top three leading tacklers, Nels Morgan with 45, Coney, who has 42, Martini with 39, and Coney's kind of done a little bit of everything. He spelled Morgan from time to time, and obviously he and Martini have also played that buck weak side linebacker. So how do you think this is going to affect him tomorrow?
Well, first off,
Martini?
I don't think he's going to be back for NC State.
That would be tough, I would think.
I've had the same procedure. I've had a meniscus twice, and there's two, you know, there's two different types. You're either cutting pieces out and getting rid of it, or you're suturing it up. But really, and time off has decreased a lot with those surgeries. You know, it's not uncommon for, it's usually around 4 weeks. I would be really surprised, you know, even though it happened during the bye week. I just don't see it being that fast. That's a quick turnaround.
That was it, because to me, I've never had it done. I've known some guys who have had it done, but I knew a kid who missed a whole baseball season mm-hmm. because of a meniscus. But he was a pitcher, so how much that affects it. But I mean, of the knee procedures, yes, the meniscus is kind of at the lower end. But for football, when you have to think about cutting and all that kind of stuff on the field, that it seems like that's a pretty quick
turnaround. He'll be back this season. I just don't think it's NC State. I think that's pretty quick.
Okay, because earlier in the week, it was day-to-day, and then we found out yesterday, well, that's not going to happen. So,
but I think it's all right. You know, Tavon Coney's done a really nice job. He's been one of my, I think, surprises, but I guess the whole defense really has surprised me so mm-hmm. far this year. But he's been fantastic in the role that he's played. I think, you know, there's been a lot of people pushing for more playing time at that buck linebacker position just with how much he's produced. Done a really nice job, as you mentioned, second leading tackler right now. A couple tackles for loss, a sack. Very athletic. The buck linebacker has the opportunity to make a lot of plays. In this scheme that Mike Elko has, there's a little more attention by the offensive line towards the Mike linebacker, and that's probably pretty broad. That's with most defenses, but the buck has quite a few more opportunities as a slashing linebacker to make some plays in space. And between Coney and Martini at the buck position, and they've been hugely productive. And if you look at this, you know, if you look at Mike Elko, his resume over the past few years at Bowling Green and most recently at Wake Forest, the buck has been a big reason why his defenses have performed well.
Yeah, and that's, we were talking on Sports Beat last night about how great the defensive line has been, but you've got, you're essentially two deep at every position on that defensive line, and you've got a lot of bodies to rotate through, and it's kept them fresh, even though they've been on the field a lot because of the tempo that the offense has played with. Does it concern you now that you lose a key cog from that linebacker core with that same thought? Because even though they were on the field, they were all on the field a lot, they at least had that kind of extra body and consistency there.
Yeah, rep count or play count is going to go up quite a bit for Coney mm-hmm. this week. And I'm sure that over the course of the bye week, they have the GPS units that they can track. I would assume they probably tried on a couple of days to get him a little more work just to see what that was like, you know, depending on when Martini's surgery was. I'm assuming they probably tried to increase his workload a little bit because he's going to be playing quite a bit more. You heard that Jameer Jones is going to be in there a little bit. I think that's going to be a very small amount. You're going to see Tavon Coney quite a bit. But, I mean, you have a guy like Nels Morgan. He's not really leaving the field either. So, you know, these guys, they want to play. The conditioning program that they've had, I think you're seeing them fresh in the third and the fourth quarter. Granted, the defense has been on the field for quite a few plays each game, but it really hasn't, I mean, it really has, at least in my mind, hasn't affected their play. I think they've been very, the third and fourth quarter, you know, they come out of halftime, they're not letting people score.
Well, and that, I agree about Morgan, but I mean, with Coney, he would spell him from time to time,
sure,
at least let
sure.
him kind of catch his breath. So now you've got Jameer Jones, and you've got to rely on a guy who has all of one tackle right now through six games. He's not going to probably play a ton. Maybe, again, give one of those guys a breather or something, but That's it's just a lot more.
It's gonna It's gonna change the dynamic.
Yeah.
It is. And against a team like USC, who in my mind I think is going to really try to establish the run, there's some data that they've seen. I know with Ronald Jones, their running back, you know, when he's able to rush the ball for 14 or 15 carries, they're winning a lot of football games. So it's getting the ball in his hands. It's basically saying, you know, Sam Darnold, you don't have to win the game. It doesn't have to be on your arm. We're going to focus this run. So the linebackers are going to play a key role. You know, you have a guy. They're going to have to step up. Someone's going to have to step up.
Yep.
Or you might have to play a little tired.
Well, and I think it's the fact that this surgery on Martini did happen about a week ago, and so Mike Elko, they didn't have a game that they had to worry about last week. He's had extra time to figure out how he's going to compensate.
I'm sure that there's a plan in place.
Clark Lee as well. Yep. Yeah.
Clark's one of my favorite coaches. You know, it was a pleasure when we could see them in the spring, and then throughout the summer and the fall too. Just a very good, and that's probably you know what a lot of players have said about Mike Elko too, is their communication skills are second to none. They do a really good job of explaining what they expect and what they want. And it was really fun watching Clark with the linebackers. A kind of a different approach. You know, it wasn't a lot of yelling and screaming. There's that part of it at times where, you know, you're setting a level of expectation, but very much the class, almost like a classroom mentality or setting of, let's learn to do this the right way first. Make sure that we're, you know, raise your hand if you have a question, right?
No, and, I mean, they were patient.
Yes.
I think that maybe they were more patient than the defensive line coach, right. Mike Elston, yeah, was, well, in the spring.
That's
but
true.
I say that, of course, kiddingly, but Mike Elko has a pretty high standard himself. But, I mean, I think they all showed patience, but I agree with what you're saying there. They were really patient.
And you know, anytime you bring in a new scheme, you want to make sure that everyone is on the same page.
Yeah.
And that starts from the top down. And then you can start to get a little more fiery once, you know, okay, does everybody understand this? Okay, well, why are you not doing it the right way? That's, you know, that's when you start to hold people to that level of accountability, and you'll probably see a little more fire. But it was really great to see, you know, first was how that information was relayed to the guys, because it's not always like that on a football field. It's more of the screaming and yelling instead of the put your arm around the guy. Do you actually understand this? Why are you not understanding this?
Right.
How can I help you?
Right. Exactly. It is 12:40. So I tell you what we're going to do. Let's go ahead and take a break here so we don't get rushed, and we'll come back and we'll do your chalk talk, talking about pressuring Sam Darnold and as well as some of the advantage game for tomorrow's Notre Dame USC matchup, which you'll hear, of course, right here on WSBT. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. It is coming up on 12:43, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Let's continue looking at tomorrow's Notre Dame-USC game, which you'll hear right here on WSBT at 7:42. We have a full day of coverage coming up for you tomorrow that starts at 1 o'clock here on WSBT. Sam Darnold, he's going to be the best quarterback that Notre Dame faces this season. Before we get into your chalk talk, and let's hear from Brian Kelly, who's on the Dan Patrick Show this morning, talking about what he's seen from Darnold.
You know, second year in the offense, trying to do a lot, and sometimes that gets you into a little bit of a problem with trying to force some things, but he's as advertised in terms of the ability to get the ball out of his hands, athleticism. You know, he has all of the traits, maybe trying to do a little bit too much sometimes. And again, probably the fishbowl effect, right? You know, everybody's got eyes on him, trying to make some plays, young guy, but just a terrifically talented player.
Darnold is completed 63% of his passes, 2,063 yards, almost 295 yards a game, 15 touchdown passes, but the 9 mm-hmm. interceptions.
A couple of fumbles, too.
Yeah, and I think he had 3 last week against Utah, and then the one at the end of the Washington State game.
Yeah, numbers are down a little bit from a completion standpoint. I think last year's around 67%. But, you know, the talent is there. The passing talent is there. And I think that, you know, to a certain extent, that's probably the case, is, you know, he's trying to win the game with every throw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a very that's a very dangerous route to take. Now he's got the high pass numbers, but the 9 interceptions, he only had 9 last, you know, the entire last year. He's on pace to go for like 4,000 yards and be right around the same number of touchdowns, but certainly protecting the football is going to be of the utmost importance, especially in a game like this. But if you're able to make a quarterback like Darnold uncomfortable, which has been what teams have done so far this year, he's going to make some mistakes. You can take a very good quarterback. You pressure him, he's average. Okay, and if you look at the Notre Dame defense so far this year, you know, we're looking at kind of the X's and O's portion of this. Notre Dame has done a really good job with their front seven, and we could even say their front four, of creating havoc at the line of scrimmage. Not necessarily just getting sacks. You look at pressure numbers of quarterback hurries.
Keep him uncomfortable.
Yeah. You don't always have to get there, but it has to be the illusion of pressure. And almost like you're kind of just, you know, you're pushing your thumb on his temple a little bit. You know, it's that constant pressure of, you might not be getting to me, you know, every play, but I know that you're there. And really, Mike Elko hasn't had to bring a lot of second level blitzes with the linebackers because the front four have done a nice job, or they're doing some blitz zone. What you see from a Mike Elko defense is you're going to see the two safeties and you're going to see a lot of rotation. So when you're watching the game tomorrow as a fan and you're seeing, okay, there's going to be two high safeties, whether it's, you know, Jalen Elliott or Nick Coleman, Devin Studstill, you know, whoever it is, or Drew Tranquil in as a rover, you're usually going to see two safeties that are going to start. You're going to know fairly early within the cadence which side is rotating. 9 times out of 10, the side where you rotate, that's where pressure is going to come from. So if they're rotating down strong or to the right side, usually there's going to be some pressure there, or some form of pressure. Not always the case. In those instances, you're usually seeing like a Mike Sam blitz is what we would call it. So that'd be, or in Notre Dame's defense, it'd be like the Mike and the Buck would both be coming.
Okay.
Or the Sam strong safety is a very common blitz as well. So you're seeing the outside linebacker coming then with the safety, a safety blitz. Now, if you're looking at the weak side, you get weak rotation. Now, the most common are going to be like a Will Weak safety. That could be the rover in there as well, or even like a Mike Will twist. So now you're seeing a little bit more movement. Now, this doesn't take into account then what the defensive line's doing. You could see some stunts. There's been a couple of times where you have a late twist, and really a good example of that, if you remember against North Carolina, on the interception we talked about last week with Ian Book, it was a late twist from North Carolina that brought the pressure free on a blitz zone. So, you know, those are things that are going to be used by Mike Elko. They're not going to resort to second level blitzes unless they have to. If they're having a tough time, and I know we just talked about this off air, USC is pretty throttled with injuries here. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some holes, I think, on both offensive and defensive lines right now. They're not getting the same type of consistent play that they thought they were early in the spring, and losing some guys certainly hurts there. I think Notre Dame is going to be able to be very competitive at the line of scrimmage defensively, and guys like Jerry Tillery, I think, are going to have some pretty good games. We've seen Andrew Trombetti so far has had probably his best season. You know, Dalen Hayes, I guess the law firm of Hayes and Hayes on both sides. Jay's been very active as well. If you can collapse that pocket a little bit, it's going to make a pure passer feel, you know, it's going to close in fairly quickly. So, you know, you're going to look first to, all right, where's that rotation coming? Can you get it with the front four? And if you can, that's where you live. If you can't, then you're going to start to see that Mike Sam, the Sam strong safety, the Mike Will twist or a Will Weak safety blitz. And one other area that we've seen Mike Elko use too, and Sean Crawford's kind of been that guy, is either a nickel or a short field corner, and that's to the boundary. So, you know, if you're on the left hash and you have the short side to the left side of the field, you're going to see a corner blitz. It is really tough to see from the weak side. The running back has to pick that up. So if you're relying on a guy to pick that up, it's not necessarily the tackle, and he's coming from depth. And Sean Crawford's done a nice job on a couple of those and getting to the quarterback, at least pressuring, and he's had a sack too.
Well, and that's something that when you mentioned Sean Crawford, I kind of meant to include that in the Martini conversation because of now lacking Martini, and because of USC's offense,
a little more nickel.
Nickel, you think tomorrow?
And if you know if people are listening, don't know what nickel is, a linebacker comes off the field, you put another defensive back in.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean Crawford's been fantastic so far this year. Always around the football, great football IQ. We could see a little bit of that. It'll all be dictated by what personnel grouping USC goes with.
Mm-hmm.
Now they could say, listen, Notre Dame is they lose one of their top tacklers in Greer Martini, a leader on the field. We might get away from some of our 4 and 5 wide or 11 personnel, and we might go with a little bigger package as far as like multiple tight ends, multiple running backs to eliminate getting or having Notre Dame sub to a nickel or dime package.
Right. It is 10 minutes in front of 1 o'clock. We've got just 10 minutes to go here. Let's get to some advantage for...
Also, one more thing. Okay. Ryan Finley might be the best quarterback that Notre Dame's going to face this year in NC State.
All right, well...
He's close
we'll
to 2,000 yards.
Next 2 weeks,
11
right?
touchdowns, no interceptions.
Man.
But it's USC first.
Like Brian Kelly was talking about, it looks like Darnold... Things blew up for him in that Rose Bowl last year with everything that he did, and there's been a lot more attention on him and that fishbowl effect, and he looks like a guy who is maybe
they lost a lot of pieces from last year's
team
too. And it's a program that usually they're going to fill those slots in. I don't think that the players that filled in, I mean, they had some really good players. Dory Jackson was really good. I mean, they had some really good wide receivers. They had some good defensive backs. It's tough to fill those areas quickly, and I don't think that the expectations were or have been met. We're still talking about a one-loss football team, so
exactly. All right, let's get to this real quick. Okay, who has the advantage? USC's running the ball. Notre Dame's defense. USC averaging 207 yards a game on the ground. Their main man Ronald Jones 640 yards, averaging 6.3 a carry, 8 touchdowns. Notre Dame's run defense allowing just 134 yards a game.
I'm going to go with Notre Dame. But if USC does win this game, it's because of Jones.
Okay. Interesting. And that's kind of the part of the game that we're not talking about
right.
at all because of the fact that you have such
everyone's looking at the quarterback position. But if Jones has a similar game, and I mean last year USC was able to run the ball. If they're able to have success on the ground, it's going to change the dynamic because you can't pressure a talented pure passer then.
Yeah. All right, USC passing the ball versus Notre Dame's defense. We talked about Darnold, obviously, extensively. They averaged 296 passing yards a game. The main threat, Deontay Burnett, 49 catches, 626 yards. That's only 12.8 per catch. 6 touchdowns, though. Notre Dame's opponents, 231 yards per game. Who's got the advantage?
I'm going here? USC here, just on the potential that Darnold has. Notre Dame has not faced a pure passer like him yet.
Exactly.
And if you look at Gus Ragland and the success he had throwing the ball to a very talented receiver, there's going to be situations and opportunities very much like that this week.
Notre Dame is running the ball, 5th in the nation, 308 yards per game. USC's run defense ranks 61st, allowing 146 a game. They're also going to be without one of their top defensive linemen. Josh Fatu was in an accident earlier this week. Is it clear advantage Notre Dame here?
Clear. Pound the rock. Give it to Josh Adams. Winbush is going to be in there as part of the running game as well. All signs would point to, Deion McIntosh being involved, Tony Jones being involved, Dexter Williams. I mean, they might as well just bring back the four horsemen and have four guys stand back there and snap it to one of the running backs.
Right.
And I mean, it's like that at this point. I mean, this offensive line is clicking. They're playing well. It's an opportunity now for them to do it against a Power 5 team that has good talent. Where the knock has been, they've done it against the teams they should do it against. They have. They struggled against Georgia. Georgia's a really good defense. I'm not going to put USC's defense in that same category, but you have some good players. If they're able to go and control the line of scrimmage, I think you're really setting the tone.
And then when Notre Dame is trying to air it out, Brandon Wimbush completing just 52% of his passes. We heard Brian Kelly talk about what a great week of practice Brandon Wimbush has had. Can Kevin Stefferson be an X factor, a factor tomorrow?
I don't know. Sean, I still can't say. I'm not going to go advantage Notre Dame yet. I just can't do it. I had a really good week of practice this week, too. It was my best week of practice. You got to do it on Saturdays.
Exactly. And, yeah, I mean, there's no two ways around that. Is this the best secondary Notre Dame has faced this year?
Man, I don't know. Probably.
I think they're better than Georgia's, right?
Yeah. Georgia's secondary looked really good because of their front seven.
Mm-hmm.
I think there may be a little more talent here, but you know, if you're not able, you know, if you're not able to win at the line of scrimmage with your defensive line, it puts a lot more pressure on the back end, and that's why Georgia has been so successful, because they have so much speed.
It is 12:55. Come back, wrap things up, make a prediction for tomorrow's game, Notre Dame and USC. You'll hear it right here on WSBT. Sean and Chirpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. We are winding things down. It is 1 minute away from 1 o'clock, 12:59 on the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT. Real quick, Evan, prediction for tomorrow's game.
I've gone back and forth on this one all week. Preseason, I had Notre Dame losing by 3. But I think based on what I've seen, and a lot of that had to do with was I wasn't sure what this Notre Dame team would turn into. I think that they've really forged an identity so far this year. I think it's going to be a close game. I'm looking at right now special teams playing a role, but I've got Notre Dame by 1, 31-30.
Ooh, really close game. All right. I've got Notre Dame. I'll give my prediction on Budweiser's game day sports beat tomorrow. Of course, a day of Notre Dame football kicks off at 1 o'clock with the Jack Swerbrick show tomorrow here on WSBT. Brian Kelly show at 2 o'clock. Game day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Grell at 3 out at Ivy Court Inn and Suites. And then Budweiser's game day sports beat comes your way at 5. We will talk to you tomorrow. Notre Dame USC, USBT South Bend.